What would you give to know the future? What would you give to know the future? Last week Sunday, as I said earlier, we had a fire in our kitchen. And Rosie said, as she went out yesterday evening for a birthday dinner she had planned, if I had known there would be a fire in our kitchen, I wouldn't have planned to go out for dinner. What would you have done to know that beforehand, to know beforehand something's going to happen? If you do, perhaps you make the necessary adjustments. If there is adjustments to be made, you would do things differently. You see, we have a great appetite for wanting to know the future, don't we? It helps to plan. Our government may well have paid handsomely for a person who can tell them about the future before COVID-19 came. Reuters and Bloomberg have a constant new feed, if you go to Canary Wharf, just constantly on the wall, to tell you what's happening minute by minute in the financial market. Just imagine someone who could predict just 24 hours of the financial market, just 24 hours. You would be possibly the richest person in the world. See, perhaps this week you've checked the weather forecast just to know what's happening so that you can plan that long overdue picnic with friends and loved ones. Only if we could know the future, right? We desperately want to know the future. People read horoscopes. They go to palm readers. They want to know if that relationship will work. Would that business succeed? Is it worth putting all my eggs in that basket? We want to know the future. And Christians are no different, right? Christians would love to know God's future for us. And the prospect that you can have a dream and someone can decode that dream for you is very appealing, isn't it? For example, there's a book called Prayer Ring. Did I put it on there? I didn't. Nonsense. Don't read it. But it proposes that all the dreams we have as humans have a meaning and interpretation that can affect your life. Now, for example, the book says this: if you eat a particular type of food in your dream, it may mean that you've been initiated into witchcraft. So pray this prayer to get out of it. Other dreams can mean that, you see, God wants to pour out particular blessings into your life, only if you can unlock the meaning of that dream. And they propose that answer. See, I guess you'd be hoping that you don't have a dream. You have a dream more like the cupbearer than the chief baker, isn't it? In Genesis 40. Lest your head be literally taken off you. But suffice it to say that such an approach to Genesis 41 would be a complete misunderstanding of anything that's going on. In fact, you see, in the Bible, very few people have the ability to interpret dreams. Apart from Joseph, one other person jumps out at me, Daniel, in the book of Daniel. Perhaps there are others. But the point is, interpreting dreams is a rare thing. It's not the norm in the Bible. In Genesis chapter 40, verse 8, you notice that Joseph himself wants to repeatedly tell us that it is not him who interprets dreams, in fact. Chapter 40, verse 8, when the cupbearer and the baker both had dreams and couldn't find anyone to interpret them, Joseph replied, "Do not interpretations belong to God? God is the one who knows the future and the only one who can interpret dreams." And when Pharaoh said to Joseph in chapter 41, verse 15, just look with me, "I heard it said, you have that said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." Joseph responded emphatically in verse 16, "I cannot do it. For God can give Pharaoh what he sees." So this passage is not telling us to go looking for dreams and decoding them for ourselves. That's not what's going on here. And that's because, you see, this story is primarily, in fact, not about us. You notice, God gives the ability to interpret dreams specifically to Joseph. It is a rare ability. And Pharaoh doesn't have it. None of his magicians and wise men have it, in verse 8. But God has given it specifically to his chosen man, Joseph. Now notice what Pharaoh says in verse 38. Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom there's the Spirit of God? Even Pharaoh recognizes it. God has made all this known to you, verse 39. There is no one so discerning and wise as you. So in doing so, God is keeping, I think, his promise to Abraham. So that in this chapter, what we see is that Joseph will be blessed by God, and you see how he becomes a blessing to Egypt and others. That's what we're going to see. That in this chapter, God is blessing Joseph and keeping his promise to Abraham, so that Joseph becomes a blessing to Egypt and the nations. And that's going to be our first point. Joseph is raised from prisoner to ruler in Egypt. He's blessed by God. Joseph is raised from prisoner to ruler in Egypt. We heard last week, isn't it? He's in prison. He's been falsely accused. He's sitting in a pit, in a dungeon. But even while he was in prison, we see God favoring Joseph, that he basically became the head of the prison. But Joseph, you see, if he had trusted the chief cupbearer to remember him in chapter 40, verse 23, 2 full years is enough evidence that he's clearly been forgotten. But there's more at stake that Joseph is being forgotten in prison here than just being forgotten. It's God's promises. See, the author of Genesis seems to be hinting that Joseph is the one through whom the promise will continue. But like his grandfather, Abraham, whose old age was a threat to God's promise to continue. No heir, no promise, remember? So Joseph is languishing in prison. But God is quietly at work in the background, as we've been seeing over these past few weeks. So Pharaoh has 2 dreams. Now, I won't spend time on the dreams because I don't think the dream is actually the thing. It's actually what God is doing through the dream. What's significant that I want you to see is how the author shows us emphatically that about what God is doing. In verse 8, no one of the magicians and the wise men of Egypt could interpret Pharaoh's dream. The leader of the superpower nation of the day, he's stumped. And to make matters worse, you know, the pharaohs of Egypt thought they were gods. And here's a dream he can't understand, and he's troubled. You can imagine Pharaoh's exasperation, isn't it, at all the superstitions of his magicians and the wise men. Absolutely nothing. And you see, what's going on here? You see how God confounds the leaders of the world at times. Can you imagine when COVID-19 started and Boris goes into one of his Cobra meetings with all his sage at the start of the pandemic, and then shows up at a news conference with nothing to offer. Nothing to offer. But we know that's not going to happen. You see, Genesis 40 has already served as a backstory to Genesis 41. And Pharaoh's exasperation perhaps juggled the memory of the cupbearer as he recalled how Joseph interpreted his own dream and that of the baker in verse 9. And look at his words to Pharaoh in verse 13. And the things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled. So Pharaoh gives a word of command, and Joseph is brought from prison in verse 14. And Pharaoh, the reason why we missed that little bit in the middle in our reading is because Pharaoh essentially repeats word for word his dreams to Joseph. And Joseph interprets them. As you read Genesis 40 and you get to Genesis 41, you kind of, you think, what's going to happen? Well, Joseph's going to interpret it, isn't it? And look at verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The 7 good years are 7 years. The 7 good years of corn are 7 years. It is one and the same. The 7 lean, ugly cows that came up afterwards are 7 years. And so are the 7 worthless ears of corn scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine." And please notice that the famine is not a result of bad weather or terrible farming. Verse 25, God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Verse 28, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. And verse 32, the reason Pharaoh, God is giving you this dream in two forms, is that the matter has been firmly decided by God. God will do it soon. Again, this is not to say if you had your dream twice, it's going to happen. But this is just saying to Pharaoh, God's going to do it. There will be a famine like no other in your land. The years of abundance would not even be remembered, verse 31. That's how bad it would be. That's why the ugly cows ate the fat cows and nothing happened. The ears of corn ate the good ones and nothing happened. You see, what's significant about this chapter is not just that God knows the future as he's revealing it to Pharaoh, but that it is Joseph, he decided to give the knowledge about the future. In fact, the chapter marks the turning point in Joseph's story. You may remember that back in chapter 37, and as we were seeing this, just illustrated this morning by Zim to the children, Joseph had a dream that his brothers would bow down to him. And his father gave him a coat of many colors. As a result, his brothers grew jealous. They threw him into a pit. And he got sold into slavery, which is how he ended up in Egypt. And Joseph's journey to prison started because of a dream he shared with his brothers. And now a dream is going to get him out of prison. And the dream doesn't just get him out of prison, it gets him promoted to be second to Pharaoh, only in regard to the throne. Look at me at verse 40. "You shall be in charge of my palace," Pharaoh said, "and all my people are to submit to your to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." I mean, just imagine, here's Boris sitting, stumped, not knowing what to do with COVID. And someone puts up their hand in sage and say, "Well, there's a guy we threw in prison. Do you want to bring him?" "Yeah, he will tell you what to do." And Boris goes, "Yeah, bring him." And then he gives the answer and Boris goes, "Do you know what? Everyone else, shove off. This guy, he's in charge." That's what's going on here. From pit to power. And notice the king-like status given to Joseph. Verse 41, he's in charge of Egypt. Wow. Verse 42, a signet ring that denotes that he has all of Pharaoh's authority over Egypt. And then he's given, notice, another kind of coat. Another splendor kind of thing. In verse 44, Joseph's words are literally death and life authority into anyone. Oh, did I already tell you that he had a dream and his brothers threw him down in prison because he said they would bow down to him? Just watch the word in verse 43, make way. That word is literally bow down. He was taken round and they go, bow down, make way for Joseph. You see, this is exactly what Joseph's dream that got him in prison is all about. He will rise from pit to ruler. And Joseph does rise to king-like status in Egypt. from humiliation to exaltation. The one rejected, now given the higher place of honor. God's quiet hand of providence to bless Joseph. When the cupbearer and the baker both had dreams and couldn't find anyone to interpret them, Joseph, you see, replied, "Do you know interpretations belong to God?" It's God who's doing this. Only God knows the future, and the only one who can interpret dreams. And Pharaoh also had a dream. And Joseph was quick to say, "I can't do it. I can't interpret your dream. Only God can." And verse 38, Pharaoh sees it. Can we find anyone like this man? One in whom is the Spirit of God. God gives Joseph the ability to interpret Pharaoh's dream. God blesses him. God favored him. Who knows what would have happened to him in prison in the long run? Maybe he would have been a great ruler in prison and died there. But he is raised from pits to rule over Egypt. But what would his rule mean for Egypt? Is the question. What would his rule mean for Egypt? And that's our second point. Joseph's rule means blessing for Egypt. Joseph's rule means blessing for Egypt. Look at verse 46. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of King Pharaoh, king of Egypt. It's now 13 years he's been away from home. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. Perhaps with people just bowing as he comes. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored them in the cities. In his city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Imagine that. God gives Joseph not only the ability to interpret dreams, but the wisdom to make an economic policy that will sustain the nation during recession. Imagine that. Wouldn't Boris just die to have that? Through the knowledge of the future that God gave to Joseph, Egypt was able to store a fifth of his food during the 7 years of abundance. And then the whole country was able to survive the famine because of this one man. See, Joseph became a blessing to Egypt. But not only to Egypt. Look at verse 57. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere. See, it may seem by now like ancient history since we learned about Abraham in Genesis 12. But in Genesis 12, God gave Abraham promises, what the New Testament calls a gospel announced in advance. And just look at the screen now. Look at what God says to Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. I will bless you, and I will bless others through you. Can you see those two things come together in Joseph? God blesses Joseph, favors him while he was in prison, and he is raised and made great in Egypt. But Joseph's rule means blessing for Egypt, and the whole world through the famine. See, God is keeping his promises through his chosen man, Joseph. And you may also remember God's promises to Abraham that his descendants will come a lot. The blessing will come to Abraham in form of many descendants. And God gave him some visual aids. I wonder if you remember any of them. He will have children as the dust of the earth. As many as the stars in the sky. Who knows the third one? Sand of the sea. See, I think there's a hint of that going on in verse 49. Look at me. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. Interesting measure to use, isn't it? Like, you didn't have to say that. You just say, it was so much. Like, it was just so much. I don't think this is just random. So I think the author is intentionally wanting us to call to mind God's promises to Abraham. And this is not just about grain for Egypt. It's about God keeping his promises to Joseph. You see, and Joseph goes on to have two sons, by the way, in Egypt. And the name of he gave to his two sons were Manasseh and Ephraim in verse 51. Got married. Pharaoh gave him a wife, and he got married. And he even changed his name, almost to say, this guy is a true Egyptian. You need to listen to him. But look at verse 52 and see what the name of Joseph's second son means. God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. See, God blesses Joseph in fulfillment of his promises to Abraham. Just like God says to Abraham, he will make him fruitful. Joseph is fruitful. And the whole nation is blessed because of God's chosen man. And see, I think that's the point of this passage. That's how this passage is pointing us to be applied to us today. Not that you and I can have a dream and we can get an interpretation from God about our personal future. I'm not Joseph. You're not Joseph. But rather, Joseph is pointing us in the direction of looking for the fulfillment of God's promises in and through his chosen man. The man whom God blesses, who knows the future, and rises to rule over the whole land. The one through whom the nations would be blessed. Need I tell you who that is? It's the Lord Jesus. Jesus who, like Joseph, is mistreated for no wrong that he has done. Jesus who, like Joseph, would be the ruler of the whole world. Jesus who, like Joseph, knows the future. Like Egypt and the nations, mine and your eternal destiny lies in listening to what he says. Just look with me at verse 55. When the famine began in Egypt, all Egypt began to feel the famine. The people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, go to Joseph and do what he tells you. I mean, you just imagine that. You go to your king, like, go to that guy. That guy over there. No food, you see, means death, right? You're going to die without food. God has said, you see, a similar thing about Jesus. In the New Testament, as Jesus transfigured before his disciples, they heard a voice come down to them. This is my beloved son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. See, Jesus says that his words are spirit and they are life. He says that he is the bread of life. You know, you can eat all the food in this world and you still die one day. You feast on Jesus through faith and you live. Jesus, like Joseph, is a blessing to those who follow and trust him by listening to what he says. And if you were to say, well, but I have all this other religion, we have God, I'm going to go to God. Well, if you go to the true God, you go, listen to him, my son. See, God is not going to give you and I the knowledge of the future. He's not going to give you or me a dream that we can interpret and unlock the economic future for our personal life or the economic recovery of the UK for that matter after COVID-19. But God has given to Jesus the knowledge of the future. See, in him are all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Jesus is the man God has chosen to bless as the ruler of the whole world. And see, we would do well to bow down to him. And see, the choice you and I have is whether we will be blessed along with him. He is the one who God has blessed. And if we will be blessed, we must come to him. Come to him. Listen to him. If you want to enjoy the blessings he experiences. Pharaoh and Egypt are blessed because they listened to Joseph. All the nations of the world are blessed because they came to Joseph in Egypt. Next, you could see that, in fact, his family must come to him if they must be blessed. In the same way, we can be blessed only if we come to Jesus. The blessing of right standing with God, of no judgment on that final day. Jesus knows the future. He controls international destinies. Nothing is random. So instead of speculating on our dreams, or reading horoscopes, or visiting diviners, or be tempted to buy prayer rings, why not entrust yourself to the one who knows the future and be assured that the future is blessed, safe in his hands, and you will be blessed by coming to him. Let's pray.